It is certainly wonderful that everyone is here today. I appreciate the fact that you're present to worship God. It is a good day. It's a good weather. It's a joy that we can come together and enjoy each other's company. But the special thing is to offer praises to God and to remember His death. It is a wonderful time that we have. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the sin of gossip, as is indicated up on the board. Lesson that I've taught a number of times through the years, but it's one of those, as you remember the Apostle Peter talked about putting your mind in way of remembrance. It is something that is important to revisit. The tongue is, as read by Brother Davis, I appreciated his reading today. We're going to actually look at the text again a little bit. The tongue is difficult to control, and these are things that we need to be mindful of. Hopefully they'll help you in the reminding of them. And so we'll spend a little time talking about the day. I wanted to start off, however, is just expressing my appreciation for the ardor and the zeal that is being shown lately by the congregation. So many who have bought into the need to really, really try our very best to serve God, becoming more effective in our personal work, for one, including singing services, determining to learn new songs. All of these things are wonderful. They're going to improve us as a congregation. Those who are involving themselves in daily Bible reading are to be commended for that, especially those who are spending time each day in study to God. I encourage all to participate in that, but I can see it. It's neat to see that those changes have been made and are being persisted in, and it's very much an encouragement to me. And to the other brethren here, and I want you to know that that is the case. And so please continue to do so, and we will continue to be encouraged by that. I am sure when we talk about the tongue, as I said, it's a very unruly member and difficult to control, but we know how powerful it is. And it can be a power indeed for good, because words can bring comfort, they can express kindness, concern, they can impart wisdom and knowledge to us. They are a primary way in which the words of God are shared. They make up a big part of our efforts as a congregation. The men that we are supporting in other lands, we are not supporting them because they're good mechanics or because they're brain surgeons. We're supporting them because they're gospel preachers. And we know that the conversion of the lost is of significance in any nation. Very proud of the men that we're supporting in the Philippines and in India and the good that they're doing in the proclamation of truth. But we ourselves, not only do we share the message each Sunday here at our congregation, and I'm able to speak to a few souls, but we also put everything up online. We try to do so with writing. We try to do so with the words that are spoken, both on YouTube, Facebook, and our website. We make a lot of efforts to share the gospel message because the tongue, words that are expressed, and it can be the pen as well as the tongue, but these things are powerful and can be used for good. People have talked about social media, how social media can be just a very bad thing, and it indeed can, and there are a lot of people that use it for this sin that we're going to talk about today, the sin of gossip, and others become argumentative. There are many ways that it is utilized that are bad, but it's not inherently bad. In fact, I have become aware of so many churches and so many Christians that are striving to do well with social media, spreading the gospel of Christ, spreading principles of Christianity, principles of righteousness that are just to be commended, and they can be utilized for good things as well. But having said that, having said the good thing that can come from the tongue, we know as well that bad things can come. It can be very destructive, and that was stated in James chapter 3 and verse 5 when it says, "The tongue is a little member, it boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles, and the tongue is a fire. It is a world of iniquity. It is so set among the members that it defiles the whole body. It sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell." Now, we don't take from that we shouldn't speak. We take from that we shouldn't speak in ways that are sinful, and that it is sometimes very difficult for us to control, and many, many bad things have come about as a result of people speaking. Words have sparked wars. They have destroyed churches. They've divided brethren. They've gutted homes. They've ended marriages. Words have turned friends into enemies. And so it's important that we know that while we cannot tame our tongue, we can restrain it. So let's just kind of make note of that first of all, and then we'll kind of get into the sin of gossip, because it almost in some ways seems contradictory to us. But I want you to consider, for example, we'll talk about this a little bit later in one of our points, but a lion tamer and then someone who owns a cat in their home. So one who is taming a lion recognizes that the lion is dangerous and recognizes the importance of training that lion, but not trusting that lion, that they, if they do things right, can control the lion, but they can never tame the lion. There are a lot of people who take exotic animals as pets, and then they realize once those exotic animals grow up a little bit, they can't control them anymore because of what kind of animal they are. It's one thing to have a dog, it's another thing to have a wolf. A dog you can trust because the dog can be tamed, but a wolf can't be tamed. It can be restrained, it can be trained to some extent, but you can never fully trust it. Trust it around others, even trust it around yourself. And so there is a difference between taming the tongue and restraining the tongue. We can't tame it, but we can control it, and that's what we need to do. It takes the control of our hearts, however, to accomplish such a thing. So we need to make sure that we are steadfast, make sure that we are righteous, make sure that we have added the virtues that Jesus expresses, make sure that we are striving to mature so that because we have control over our heart, we have control over ourselves, and among ourselves, the tongue is set to defile all of ourselves, all of our members, so it is the most important thing for us to train and to control. Jesus understood this. In fact, the Old Covenant had something to say about these kinds of things. There were things under the Old Covenant that were not inherently wrong, but still defiled a man. But there was a point that Jesus made in Matthew chapter 15 concerning what goes into the mouth and what comes out of the mouth. He says the things that come into the mouth, that is unclean food. Do you remember that in the New Covenant, God cleansed certain things? In other words, He allowed certain things. The Gentiles didn't have to become Jewish in their diet in order to be Christians. Not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. We're not talking about food, we're talking about words here. Jesus, in Matthew chapter 15, in verse 16 of the text, asked some of His listeners, "Are you without understanding? Do you not understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated, but the things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart? And these are what defile a man. Out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands, that does not defile a man." And so as we see, the mouth, the tongue, can be something that is destructive. And one of the things that defiles a man is the sin of gossip, which is with the tongue. It is something that shows contemptuousness for your neighbor. It is the evidence of an unrestrained tongue. It does not have the control of the heart. One has not developed sufficiently to know or to care that these things are inappropriate and should not be done, and so they are done. I remember as a young preacher when I first started out that there are a list of sins that are given in Scripture that I would preach against, and I would preach against forcefully, and I would talk about those who are outside the covenant of Christ and who are not interested in God, who are guilty of worldliness, and we talk about those big sins, but there are sins that Christians have committed in my experience that I would have never thought possible for Christians to commit. Okay, it's one thing for the unwashed, it's one thing for the undefiled, the one thing for the worldly and the ones who are uninterested, for them to engage in these activities, but Christians engaging in these activities, it's something that cannot cannot hardly be fathomed. And yet I've seen much of it, lies and deceit and adulteries and all sorts of evil things. But again, all of us, we might never would consider murdering someone or stealing, knocking down a bank or anything like that. But what about lying? What about gossip? What about blaspheme? Or slandering against our neighbor? Those kinds of things are things that we can be guilty of. James chapter 3, and talking about that concept of taming in verse 8, as has been read, no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil. It is full of deadly poison. With it we bless God and our Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God, and out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursing. Brethren, these things ought not to be so. We should be consistent with our character. We should be single in our purpose. We should be single in our mind's eye. We should be pure and sincere. And that does not allow for us to be duplicitous. It doesn't allow for us to be of two minds. We are to be of one mind. It doesn't allow for us to kind of mix the worldly in with the righteous. That just is not something that is acceptable to God. So we need to document in our lesson today a bit about how God feels about this particular sin, the sin of gossip, and how to avoid it. And I want to start off by noting the fact that the person who gossips is one who bears tales. He is a talebearer. We're not necessarily talking here about something that is made up, although much gossip is not true. But you realize that something can be gossip even if it is indeed true. It can still be gossip, and it can still be a sin in the sight of God. In Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 9 of the text, the wise man said that he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. So think about that. I am of a mind that sin, when it is confessed to God, is forgiven. When sin is committed, it must be confessed. And it must be acknowledged if it is a public thing, if it is something that is well known. But as you look at Matthew chapter 18, beginning in verse 15 and going down, not all sin is something that we should be aware of that others commit. It is something that may be covered up. And we don't mean by that a cover-up in the sense that we see politically in our day and time, but discretion and care and concern for the soul of an individual, that they not be unduly humiliated if they have sought God's forgiveness, if they are truly penitent, but instead a desire simply to strengthen and to edify and to help one another. That's a part of being a child of God. And so we are told there again in Proverbs 17, if you cover a transgression, you are seeking love. It is a good thing. It is a loving thing not to talk to other people about a sin that your friend or your brother or your sister have committed. That's not going to accomplish anything except possibly, as indicated in the last part of verse 9, it can cause separation. Others may not have the same attitude. It may be simply egregious enough that individuals will become divided over the matter. It can cause problems. And that's simply not something that is necessary. But you know what? It is something that thrills some people. You know what I found about so-and-so? You know this new thing that I've heard? I want to tell you about it. It is disturbing how much thrill and enjoyment the gossip gets out of spreading such tales. In Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 8, the words of the talebearer are described as like tasty trifles. And they go down into the inmost body like tasty trifles. You know what a trifle is? It's a small thing. We talk about that trifle. But it has reference to something that gives no sustenance. It has nothing really to say for it with regard to food other than that it tastes good. So a Twinkie is a trifle. Or a piece of cake is a trifle. Or a piece of chocolate is a trifle. And boy, don't those things taste good. And yet, they don't do us any good. They don't help us in any way, but we still want them, do we not? Because tasty trifles are something we enjoy. And the gossip enjoys bearing tales. But we can't emphasize how destructive their efforts can be. Just as one who is gluttonous or one who does not care for himself or one that majors in the trifles rather than good nutrition can poison himself. He can destroy his own soul. But But these things, because they involve themselves not only in yourself, but those that you spread the trifles to, they can bring poison to the brethren, to others, to those who are impacted by the gospel that you might spread. So that's the first point we want to make. The second one is that it sows strife. The person who gossips sows strife. There is a text in Proverbs chapter 16 that is noted here. We are told in verse 16 there are six things that the Lord hates. Yes, seven that are an abomination to Him. I want you to look at that phrase, an abomination to God. These are an abomination to God. We're not going to spend the time reading the entire text. There are seven in the list. But one in that list is he who sows discord among brethren. False witness, verse 19, who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. It's an abomination to God. Now, how many times have you seen such a thing? Anecdotally, I'm not asking you to raise your hands or to speak, but have you not seen brethren who have sown discord? One way in which discord can be sown, as we've already read, is the fomenting of strife through gossip. It is used to impugn character. It is used sometimes to drive a wedge. It is used to gain sides. And gossip is sinful because gossip is abominable in the sight of God. It is an abomination to Him. And I would say that that alone is reason enough not to gossip. Think about all of the destructive things that come as a result of it. It's speaking, and sometimes it's speaking the truth. Or someone may actually use that as a defense against gossip. We're going to talk about that a bit later. But regardless, the problems that it causes, the poison that it brings, the sowing of discord is something that is a reason enough not to gossip. And so then we get to the next point, and that is the idea of the slanderer. Because a lot of gossip is not true. A lot of gossip is something that is either a mistake. It's not something that is intended necessarily to be untrue, and yet it is spread quickly. And you look at all of the examples that we find in the New Testament. We actually talked about that with regard to Paul in our class today concerning what was maliciously said about him to impugn his character, about taking a Gentile into the temple, and he didn't do any such thing. He was not guilty of that, and yet the word had spread. There were an awful lot of people that were enraged by the fact that Paul had desecrated the temple. They had heard it. He's an evil man. He's a terrible man because of what he has done. That's gossip, is what that was. And the preeminent thing about it is it was shared, but it wasn't true. And indeed, the person who gossips is a slanderer, a perverse man, Proverbs 16:28. He sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. I got to tell you about this. And you hear about this, young girls, young boys, older men, older women. It doesn't matter who it is, but you hear a characteristic thing is that if you're not present, they're going to talk about you. Or the old bromide that you hear about the preacher, it says, we had the preacher over to dinner, and they don't mean that he ate with them, but we had the preacher for dinner is what is indicated that. Yeah, that's why I said it wrong. So we had the preacher for dinner, and they don't mean that he came over to eat with them, but rather they talked about the preacher while they were eating, and they ate him up. And those kinds of things indeed can destroy reputations. It is a perverse desire, corrupt desire, whispering to destroy the reputation of others. We're told in Psalm 101 in verse 5, whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. These are the words of God. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. But notice the first part of that text. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. God cannot stand the gossip. God cannot stand the whisperer, the one who is a slanderer. And that gets us to the final point with regard to this, and that is the person who gossips is a busybody. A busybody. And of course the text is 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 15, let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other person's matters, other people's matters. Now I want you to think about that for a few moments. A busybody. Gossip is one way of being a busybody. It's not the only way, but meddling in the affairs of others. We had to withdraw. Only time it's happened in my experience or time as a preacher, we had to withdraw from one individual for gossiping. You know what that individual's defense was? It was true. Now, it wasn't established to be true. Others said that it wasn't true, but that person was convinced it was true. And so what they were saying was not wrong, not taking into account that that person was having deleterious effects upon the marriage of a couple as a result of what that person was saying. Was unrepentant, unwilling to make a change, acknowledged that it was none of their business, and as such, that person was withdrawn from because of their gossip. Let none of you suffer because you're a busybody in other people's matters. Now, that doesn't say don't let people mistreat you because you're a busybody, and the busybody's okay. No, because it's in the list of murderers, thieves, and evildoers. Basically, don't make sure that it's not possible for an individual to make an accusation, to bring such an accusation righteously against you because you actually did it. Don't be a meddler in other people's matters. And that is something, again, that can be gossip even if it is true or if it is not, because gossip is truly meddling. What good is it going to do? What are you helping? Have you talked to the individual about it? Does that individual want it to be said or noted? Does anyone else need to know? Does anyone else have to know? What part of it is you? Now, we do have a responsibility as Christians to try to save one another, but that's not what a gossip is doing. And a lot of times that's what the gossip is doing, to rationalize the evil that they are performing, but there's not really that care or that concern to make things better. And often it is not important to say those things to make things better, but it is, again, a tasty trifle for us to be a busybody. And so we need to be careful about that as well. It's censorious, it is judgmental, it is harmful. We're told in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 11 that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner. Why were they disorderly? They weren't working at all, but they were being busybodies. They were busybodies. And he said, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ, you work in quietness and eat your own bread. Now, the busybody in this particular text, 2 Thessalonians 3, may have included gossip. It's not the same thing, but gossip is certainly a part of what causes an individual to be a meddler. But that gets us into the next part of our lesson. There are two slides that I want to share with you with regard to that, and it is, how is it we can avoid the gossip? Very simple thing. And the first is not be idle. And that's what the text of 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 was talking about. There were some who had quit their jobs and were looking up in heaven and waiting for Jesus to come again, not realizing it could happen at any time, but it could possibly, because of Christ's long suffering, not happen for a long while. And so they were, because they didn't have anything else better to do, being idle, they were going to house, and they were gossiping and they were meddling in the business of others. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 13, we are told that Paul wrote the young evangelist Timothy and said this, besides this, they learned to be idle, wandering about, these young women, that they are learning to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies. You notice there that the words, though they are not the same, they are combined together because they go hand in hand. Don't have anything better to do. My mind is not occupied. My hands are not occupied. And as a result of that, I'm going to be a gossip. I'm going to meddle in the affairs of others. And they say things which they ought not say. So if you want to just basically give a very concise statement concerning the problem with gossip, is you're saying things you ought not. Doesn't matter if they're truth or if they're a lie. It doesn't matter what it is that you may be saying, it's not well thought out and God doesn't want you to say it. And so that is indeed gossip, especially as it impacts others or it is about others. But you know those who are busy with little time to insert themselves in other people's lives, they're much less likely to be guilty of gossip. What are they doing? I don't know. I'm not paying attention. I'm too busy with myself. You remember what Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount about those individuals who are quick to judge others? But he said, don't do that. Instead, take out the beam that is in your own eye before you hasten to take the mote out of your brother's eye. Well, we can see the problems with other people very well, but do we see our own? Because we are so outwardly giving attention to those things outward, that we're motivated by outward things, that we're focused. Outwardly focused is the word I was trying to think of. We're outwardly focused instead of self-examination being the characteristic of our lives. It's easy to do that. I'm not saying that you cannot convict. I'm not saying you cannot admonish. I'm not saying that Paul's statement, when those who are spiritual restore an individual, talking about one who is guilty of sin in the spirit of meekness, we are to be our brother's keeper. We are to look out for others. But this is not something that is beneficial. This is something that you ought not to be doing, and you need the wisdom and the ability to make a distinction. You know, that's one of the problems sometimes with the gossip. And you try to tell them, that is gossip, you ought not to be doing it. Well, I'm justified because. And then they give some rationalization that is absolutely illegitimate. But in their minds, it's fine. And in reality, often it's because they like to do it, and because they don't have the wisdom and the spirituality and the righteousness and the integrity to recognize what's wrong with it. And then when a good, faithful Christian comes and shows them that it's wrong, they're not willing to accept it because of their arrogance and because of their selfishness and because of their foolishness. You remember what in Proverbs the wise man says about the fool? He's the one that's not willing to listen to wisdom. He's not willing to listen to the admonitions of others. He just does what he wants to do, what he thinks is right, and he hasn't grown up enough to know different. And often that is the case with the gossip. So the first thing to say is that just be busy. Concern yourself with your life. Because I'll tell you something, as a preacher of the gospel, and the case may be true to one extent or another in your own life, as you're minding your own business and doing your own thing, you're going to hear about other things anyway, or you're going to have to involve yourselves in the lives of others as a matter of course, and you don't have to seek it out, and you don't have to enjoy it, and you don't have to be a busybody, because it's going to come to you from time to time anyway. There's a preacher, his name is J.T. Smith, who was named by some, this has been years and years ago, but by some as a troublemaker because he was involved in various issues and it had his share of controversy in his life. And there was a joke that he said in one time when a debate was being held between institutional and non-institutional preachers, and he said that I was just sitting in my office studying and the phone rang. And that was it, the phone rang. And so the idea was, I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't being a busybody. I wasn't being a meddler. There was something maybe that I had to deal with, but I was busy. I was doing my own job. And when people need you, they have a tendency to ask for you. When there is a problem, it has a tendency to make itself known. But for me to have to go out and to drum it up and to involve myself in other people's lives just because I like to hear what they're doing and what they're not, and their failures and their problems and those kinds of things, that's not what a Christian is to be like. And so we need to be careful about those things. The second thing and final point to be made with regard to this is the tongue requires constant surveillance. And so now we get back to that concept of taming versus training. Because again, in James chapter 8, we are told no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. I told you about the lion tamer. I want to give you just an example as illustration. There's a man by the name of Roy Horn. You may not know the name, but you do know the partnership that he had with the Siegfried and Roy lion tamers. They had white lions, and they were famous on Vegas back in the 90s and 2000s. And in 2003, Roy Horn of the lion tamer duel, Siegfried and Roy, he was attacked by one of his lions. And what had happened was he was bit first on the arm. So he's there and he's doing his act and a lion bites him. So how does he react to it? Well, how he reacted to it, he slapped the cat. He got angry and he made a mistake. And though his version of it differs, and there are some different versions, they were talking with some other lion tamers and said basically what he did was he reacted inappropriately to this. Now, you can imagine being inappropriately reacting to a lion biting you on the arm. But he slapped the cat, and as a result of this, the lion knocked him off his feet, bit his neck, severed his spine, and caused a stroke. There was massive blood loss as a result of this, and it caused permanent motor and speech damage. Didn't kill him. He survived barely. His life was impacted from that point on, but he was a man fully at home with the animals. Are you fully at home with your tongue? In other words, do you think to yourself, okay, I've recognized what we talk about today. I do my very best not to be guilty of gossip. Keep this in mind. If a man thinks he stands, let him take heed lest he falls. That happened just one time with Roy Horn. Surviving, barely, but fully at home with the animals who made a simple mistake. And we can do the same with regard to the tongue. Even the most experienced of us can sin because of an unguarded moment. I have seen time and time again individuals who have acknowledged sin in their speech, who have come forward and said, I made a mistake, or I am sorry, or I said something that I should not. And they would have never considered cheating on their wife. They would have never considered knocking down a bank. They would have never considered killing a man in anger, but they said something they should not have said. It was a small mistake. It was something that can happen, certainly, to any one of us. But in fact, they weren't being duly diligent in constantly surveilling the situation and their response to it. James chapter 3 and verse 9, we bless the tongue with our God and Father, and with it we curse men who are made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Now look at this final image that is given in the 11th verse and 12th verse. Because it illustrates the point. He said, a spring sends forth fresh water, but not bitter. A spring doesn't send forth bitter and fresh water. Now understand the significance of it at that day, because they had to have wells. They knew you couldn't drink from the Dead Sea, didn't they? They knew that it was necessary for them to get fresh water, not bitter water. And so they knew where the wells were, where the water was that they could drink. And it was characteristic. It is something that they knew as a truth. It is real. Typically, that when you have water coming out of an opening, it's either going to be fresh or it's going to be bitter. It's not going to be a mixture of both, or it's not going to be bitter one time and fresh the next time. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives? Or a grapevine bear figs? Thus, no spring yields both salt water and fresh. It just doesn't work that way. Nature teaches us that. And so it ought not to be that our tongue works that way either. I am righteous with my tongue. I express love for my brethren. I encourage, I edify. Have I ever spoken evil of a brother? Have I ever exposed a transgression? Have I ever told a tale? Have I ever sowed discord? Have I ever spoken in anger? Well, then I haven't surveilled the tongue as I should. And that's an important thing. Now, I make a lot of mistakes with my tongue. I've made 4 or 5 today. Didn't speak clearly, mangled and muddled my words together. As I get older, that happens a little bit more often. I'm just not quite as facile with my tongue as I used to be. Not as good at reading. When you're reading through bifocals, it makes it a little bit different. You don't say it as clearly as you possibly can. We've got to be constantly working at it, constantly surveilling it. Constant vigilance is required for us to be effective for blessing rather than cursing. Keeping our hearts pure, because what comes out of the mouth comes from the heart, and that's what defiles a man. So finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely or of good report, if there's any virtue, anything that is praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Think about these things. Fill your mind with these things. Study these things. Talk about these things. Be around individuals who advocate for these things, who illustrate these things by example of their lives, and stay away from those things that can cause sin with the tongue. And this certainly is the case with regard to gossip. And so as we draw our lesson to a close, we haven't covered everything to be covered, but that is enough for today. Among the seven things that are an abomination to God, as we stated from Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 19, is the one who sows discord among brethren. We talk about gossip. Yes, it's a sin of the tongue. Is it a worse sin than killing someone? Is it a worse sin than immorality? Is it a worse sin than drunkenness? Well, the consequences can be every bit as dire. They can. Not only that, but it's in the same list that will keep individuals out of the kingdom of heaven, and God is the one who put it there. So I think in a sense we can say it's not harmless. It is not minor. God hates it. And so should we. And we ought not to stand for it in our lives or in the lives of others. But it is a problem. And so we ask that you be diligent to monitor your life, monitor your tongue, and do your very best not to be guilty of gossip. We're going to offer an invitation at this time. We are so thankful that you're here. And it may be that being here indicates a mindset of becoming a child of God, that you have heard the gospel of Christ sufficiently to know that Jesus is the one, to believe that he was sacrificed on the cross, resurrected from the dead. He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. If that is true, and you believe that, turn away from your sins, confess him as Lord, and be baptized today to have your sins washed away. The invitation is yours. If there is anyone else in our number, we care for you so much. We want your soul to be saved, you to be reconciled to God if there is iniquity that is separating you from God. And we'll pray for you, and we'll take your confession if that is what is necessary. If you need that, encouragement, help in any way, if we can assist you, we ask that you come together. While together we stand, while we sing the song selected.